Listening Library presents First Light by Rebecca Stead. Read for you by David Aykroyd and Colleen Marlowe.
Prologue. Matthias. Grace Hope. Most boys his age had never touched paper. There was little left. Paper was reserved for fine drawing and important documents. Matthias knew even before he could skate that if he were to harm any of it, if he were to crease one corner of one sheet, the consequences would be serious. But Matthias could not resist his mother's drawing table. He loved the drawers and panels that opened almost without a sound, the bright vials of dye, the immaculate brushes on their small rack, the smooth wooden box of charcoal. And although he was a very obedient boy in almost every other way, he regularly explored the contents of the table when he found himself alone with it. Matthias knew its every measure, including the shape of the black dye stain that had dried inside one drawer before he was born. And each time he approached the table, he expected to find it exactly as he had always found it before. Today he found something new. It was a thick paper envelope, closed but unsealed, underneath his mother's working sketches. Matthias unwound the string closure slowly, being careful to remember the length that should be left hanging when he tied it again. Inside was a square of paper unlike anything Matthias had ever seen. One side of the square glowed with an image in color, almost as if someone had frozen a moment in time and flattened it, capturing every detail. Even his mother, considered the most talented artist now alive, couldn't create anything like this. Matthias turned it carefully in his hands, holding the square by its sharp corners. It was an image of two women. Sisters, he thought. And there was something else. A glowing blur behind them. The sun.
Chapter 1. Peter. New York City. 7 years later. A headache, Peter thought as he lay in bed with one arm thrown over his eyes, is something you have to experience to understand. No one can describe a headache to someone who has never had one. He rolled to one side and reached for the little spiral notebook on his night table. Peter's mother had gotten headaches for as long as he could remember. They sometimes lasted for days, during which she sat in the red chair next to the pull-out couch where his parents slept. She didn't eat, or laugh, or make the proper supper she otherwise insisted upon. She hardly got up at all. "She's gone away again," his father would say. "But she'll be back." It happened maybe twice a year. Everyone said how much Peter was like his mother. Their skin that was nearly paper white, their all-over freckles, their wavy hair, hers dark, his blonde like his father's. Even the way they sneezed, always twice, and laughed, very quietly, after one loud sort of bark. So Peter had always assumed that, like his mother, he would get headaches one day, and that when he did, they would be headaches just like hers. Peter paged through the worn notebook. It had his friends' phone numbers in it, and the names of some video games he wanted if his parents ever let him get a video game, and the address of a company in Oregon that sold old radio parts for almost no money, and a bunch of other things. He flipped to the inside back cover, where he had made a series of slashes. Just after his 12th birthday, Peter's mother began asking him whether he had a headache. She had never asked him that before, and he couldn't help thinking it was strange she had to ask at all. Wouldn't it be obvious when he had a headache? Wouldn't he, too, sit in the living room and never smile or get hungry? But she kept asking, every week or two, always smiling carefully, as if she were expecting bad news. So they waited, together. Peter got his first headache a few months later. He knew right away what it was, and three things surprised him about it. First, it lasted only a few hours. Second, although it hurt some, he was able to eat the same salt and vinegar potato chips he bought after school every day. Third, he didn't tell his mother about it. The only person he told was Miles. He and Miles had been in the same class every year since kindergarten. They knew everything about each other. For instance, Peter knew that Miles only pretended to hate the two stepsisters who lived uptown with Miles's father and stepmother. The truth was that Miles liked them, and that he liked his Monday and Friday nights at his dad's. He liked how the apartment was full of life, with friends coming and going and teasing at dinner, and the way they always ate oranges and popcorn while they watched TV together. And Miles knew that Peter was afraid to tell his mother about his first headache, because it had brought him a little closer to knowing what he had already half known for years, that his mother's headaches were not headaches at all, but something else entirely, something she didn't want to talk about, something like sadness. Then Peter had more headaches. He took the stub of a pencil from where he had wedged it into the spiral of his little notebook and made a mark next to the others. He counted to himself, slowly. His 9th in a month. He replaced the notebook on the table and rolled over so he could look through the skylight next to his bed. Peter's family lived in 2 rooms, if you counted the kitchen but not the bathroom. His parents were shown the apartment by mistake. The university where his father taught had it down as a 2-bedroom, but his mother had loved it on sight for its high, slanted ceiling and its enormous skylights, saying she wanted to sleep under the stars, even if you couldn't make them out very well in the city. So they had taken it and made adjustments. One of the adjustments was the pull-out couch his parents used for a bed. Peter's loft was another. The loft was a high, carpeted platform that stretched across one end of the living room. Peter's mother always described the living room as, thankfully, rather enormous. Although it was without doubt an uncommon room, Peter's loft held what his father would call the usual artifacts. Along with the bed, the desk, and the bookcase, there were 3 shoeboxes packed with baseball cards, a few stuffed animals, and a collection of old radios, most of which Peter had rebuilt himself, or tried to. A waist-high wooden railing looked over the living room below, but there was no ladder. Peter's father had built a flight of narrow steps inside the coat closet. And while Peter could hear anything said loudly from the living room, including telephone or dinners on, the polite thing was to open the closet door and call up the stairs. His mother nearly always used the stairs, while his father was more likely to forget and yell out to him from the living room couch. Which was why it surprised Peter, still staring out through the skylight, to hear his mother calling him from the kitchen. "Peter!" His mother was English. When she said his name, it sounded like Peter. Peter rolled to his back and tried to make the sound of someone absorbed in math homework. "Daddy called. He's canceling his office hours and coming home early. He has something to tell us. He says it's something big." Peter sat up experimentally. The headache was almost gone now. For a moment, he could see a kind of flickering from the corner of his eye, something that disappeared when he turned his head. "How big?" he called down. But there was only the sound of water running and dishes clinking together in the kitchen sink. Peter's father was a glaciologist. He studied glaciers, or, as Miles liked to call them, big ice cubes. There were 2 parts to the job. One part was teaching in New York. Peter knew that side of his father very well. He wore V-neck sweaters with a shirt and tie underneath, had orange juice and 7-grain toast for breakfast every day, and got home by 5 o'clock, unless it was Wednesday when he played basketball with some professors. Most nights, Peter could hear him clicking away on his laptop, writing an article about global warming or making notes for a lecture. The other part of a glaciologist's job was fieldwork. Peter's father camped for weeks at a time on Arctic ice, where he drove dog sleds and snowmobiles, hoisted himself up frozen walls, and fired flares to scare polar bears away. He had eaten raw seal, ridden in helicopters, and tumbled into deep cracks in the ice. Peter knew this father from stories, most of them told by graduate students who came over for dinner. They were always talking about the time Dr. Solemn had grabbed someone who almost got blown out of an old, doorless helicopter, or the time he fired a rifle over the head.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?